sales except for the history you do not know. Welcome to the Sales History Podcast, bringing the brilliant and sometimes strange minds, methods, and ideas from the sales profession's past with applications to today. Here is your host, best-selling author of The Transparency Sale and The Transparent Sales Leader, keynote speaker, trainer, and nerd, Todd Capone.
Recently, I was interviewed on a podcast, and the last question that they asked me was, what is one really important concept that salespeople need to know today that for the most part they don't, or they don't have their arms around? And my answer was the concept of cognitive or confirmation bias. And I remember the two hosts looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I went on to explain what it was, but I don't really think it resonated. However, as I go through and I read through the history of sales and the history of concepts around how people reach decisions, this concept comes up over and over again as such a core important concept for salespeople to know, and yet we don't tend to. And so I want to today take you through 400 years of sales advice and the idea of selling ideas. So let's start by going all the way back to the year 1620. There was an individual, a modern philosopher at the time, named Sir Francis Bacon, and he was the one that is largely credited with coming up with this idea of confirmation bias. What Sir Francis Bacon wrote was, once a human intellect has adopted an opinion, either as something it likes or as something generally accepted, it draws everything else in to confirm and support it, even if there are more and stronger instances against it than there are in its favor. That's confirmation bias. I want you to think through that through the lens of, we're in 2024. Depending on when you're listening to this, we are getting into the heart of political season. Elections are coming up. Go to your favorite social media site and think about your opinions on something, and then read a post, read a tweet. Once you've established an opinion on something, you will take that tweet in to support your opinion, whether or not that tweet supports your opinion or not, right? Meaning you're leaning one way and there's a tweet that lays out logic or data that supports that opinion. What do? You say, oh, that's a good one. And you file it in your brain and you become stronger in your previously held belief. What do you do when there's a tweet that goes against your opinion? Your brain likely says to itself, here's why that tweet and that logic is incorrect. And now you've established another argument that you can use in support of your prevailing opinion. That's confirmation bias. That's cognitive bias. And we see it over and over again. So let's take a journey to the 1780s and the Constitutional Congress that was taking place. Imagine today somebody trying to push through a new U.S. Constitution. Well, Benjamin Franklin, who is one of the founding fathers of the United States and who is credited with authoring both the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, he delivered some really sound sales advice 230 plus years ago. And here was that advice. The way to convince another is to state your case moderately and accurately. Then scratch your head or shake it a little and say, that is the way it seems to you, but that, of course, you may be mistaken about it, which causes your listener to receive what you have to say and, like as not, turn about and try to convince you of it since you are in doubt. But if you go at him in a tone of positiveness and arrogance, you only make an opponent of him. That's the way that Benjamin Franklin thought about his role in trying to sell ideas to this new country, which was the United States. Now, like I said, can you imagine trying to sell that in today's environment? At that Constitutional Convention in 1787, there was a lot of difference of opinion, much like today. The U.S. had just fought a war to gain freedom and liberty, and the delegates were justifiably concerned about creating a central government, no matter how modern at the time and thoughtful this concept and constitution could be. At the time, much like you'd expect today, the delegates at the convention picked apart every piece of it, every sentence. There wasn't a single delegate that didn't find something wrong with it. Now, do you think that Benjamin Franklin sold them on the Constitution by telling them how wrong they were? Of course not. Do you think he sold them by arrogantly talking about how great his writing was? Or do you think he ever said, oh, you think you're so smart? Well, why don't you write it then? Of course not. Instead, here was Benjamin Franklin's speech that led to the Constitution being signed, even though every single delegate had a problem with it. I confess that I do not entirely approve of this Constitution at present, but sir, I am not sure I shall never approve it. For having lived long, I have experienced many instances of being obliged by better information or fuller consideration to change opinions even on important subjects which I thought right but found to be otherwise. In these sentiments, sir, I agree to this Constitution, with all its faults, if they are such. But because I think a general government necessary for us, and there is no form of government but what may be a blessing to the people if well administered, on the whole, sir, I cannot help expressing a wish that every member of this convention who may still have objections to it would with me on this occasion doubt a little of his own infallibility, and to make manifest our unanimity, put his name on this instrument. Franklin's approach was simply this: if you go at a man with a hammer and tongs, you, quote, only make an opponent of him. That was Benjamin Franklin in the 1780s. Now let's fast forward again. We're going to go to 1955 this time. And there was a guy named John D. Murphy who wrote a story in Sales Opportunity magazine. And he summed it up in a way we still seemingly struggle with today. Murphy pointed to the idea that if we approach a sales engagement from the lens of salesperson versus prospect, and have set a goal of beating the customer down with all your superior argument, you really have no one to blame but yourself when the customer plays the role you have assigned to them, which is to oppose you. Murphy went on to say, quote, when someone tries to force an idea down our throat, we automatically react by going on the defensive. We literally close our minds to the idea which comes to us as an enemy. We open our minds to ideas that are presented in a harmless manner. A suggestion is more powerful than a threat in the sales world. And again, this is 1955. He went on to say, an innocent-looking idea dangled in front of a prospect is more powerful than attempting to force your ideas down their throat. Benjamin Franklin, he got what he wanted. And it wasn't because he was passive. In the 1950s, there was also an individual named Dr. Pierce P. Brooks. The guy owned everything. He was the head of a number of insurance companies, a number of real estate companies. He was a director of a large bank and engaged in piles of other companies. However, just 9 years before that, at the age of 45, he was unemployed. Within those 9 years, he was worth millions. And at the time, millions, when in today's terms, would be astronomical. He needed to be an incredible salesperson to pull that off, and here was his philosophy. So again, to quote Dr. Pierce P. Brooks in the 1950s, he said, successful salesmanship boils down to a matter of the salesman being able to sell his ideas to a prospect and get them accepted as the prospect's own ideas. In nearly every instance, he will find himself facing a prospect who does not believe as he does. If he did, he would already purchase the article or service, and there would be no jobs for salesmen. The first natural response of any prospect is a no response. The salesman should be thankful for this no. Otherwise, there would be no need for salesmanship and no need for salesmen. No salesman in his right mind would think of physically twisting the prospect's arm until he agreed to say yes. Yet, while few salesmen would attempt to do this physically, they do attempt to force the customer to say yes by mentally twisting his arm. The salesman's job is to make the prospect want to. You can't make the prospect want to by opposing him, by proving to him how wrong he is, by arguing him down with superior logic. That's the 1950s. And here we are today, and we still attempt to beat down our customers with logic. But as even Sir Francis Bacon in the 1600s said, logic is polarizing. When you go into a consensus sale like we're doing today, and let's say you've got 10 people in the audience, five of them are leaning towards you when they walk in, and five are leaning against, and you show, say, your NASCAR slide, which is your logo slide, what do you think happens? That's logical. It's a slide that you may be so proud of and you think builds credibility because look at all these incredible logos. Well, those five people that are leaning towards you when they walk in, what are they thinking? They probably look at that slide and they go, wow, you know what? If they're good enough for them, they're good enough for us. I'm going to use this. And now, in terms of that confirmation bias or cognitive bias we said before, they are now stronger in their opinion and they're leaning towards you. So bravo, you did great with those five. But what about the other five? Those other five who are coming in leaning against you, maybe they want a competitor, or maybe they want to do nothing at all or do some other solution. They're going to look at that same NASCAR slide or those same logos and do the opposite. They're going to look at it and say either, wow, those are some big companies. We're going to be a small fish in a big pond. Ugh, I don't think I want to work with these guys. They're using your credibility slide against you. Or they may look at that NASCAR logo slide of all the customers again that you're so proud of and say, huh, do they really know our business? These logos are all across different industries. I don't think they're specialists like we need. I'm going to use that against them. Again, your logic is polarizing. Instead, we all know this, and we've got to seek out ways to get better at it. That stories and emotion, they bring us together, they bind us. So when you are a consensus salesperson, take the advice from the 1600s and Sir Francis Bacon, or take the advice from the 1700s and Benjamin Franklin, all the way up to the 1950s and throughout today, and really grasp this idea that I think the biggest threat to getting consensus built and getting our ideas put across to our potential customers is our lack of an understanding of how confirmation and cognitive bias works. And instead, we've got to get really, really better at presenting ideas and doing it in a transparent way so those become the ideas of your customers and your stories and the emotion and the rewards that are available to those buyers and the outcomes that they thought maybe they would never be able to achieve are possible. That emotion is what brings them together. So give that a try. Give that a thought. I can help. Of course, I'm biased, but I do teach something called the presentation choreography that actually teaches you how to reorder your formal messaging so that it not only tells a great story, but it leads to your solution instead of leading with it. It makes the customer the hero, not you. And I know this sounds weird, but it actually follows the choreography used in reality makeover TV shows. So your Queer Eyes, your Biggest Losers, your Restaurant Impossibles, your Extreme Makeovers, your Bar Rescues, they all follow a choreography that not only tells a great story, but it compels the audience to action. And that's what you're looking for. So that's today's edition. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned a little bit about our history, going all the way back 400 years of sales advice and how to sell ideas. As always, I so appreciate you listening in. And if you've got ideas, if you've got thoughts for future episodes, please reach out. You can find ways to contact me on LinkedIn or on my website at www.toddcapone.com. And until next time, thanks again.